From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Chish, Hawa, Toyoksak Nusum, Salama, for joining the conversation. On today's show, we'll chat with folks from REACH's Infant Learning Program, which focuses on early intervention in children up to 3 years old. Title Echoes, the literary and arts journal from UAS, is launching this week and has a celebration this Friday at 7 p.m. And the Juno Symphony is partnering with Youth Ensemble Aurora Strings for a concert happening this Saturday and Sunday. Those conversations, sounds wild, music, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
This is Juno Afternoon. Well, Folk Fest is next week. It's right around the corner. And we'll have music lined up all week long here on the show. As a little bit of a highlight, here's a live in-studio tune from last year with returning group Tucker Tunes with their song Tropical Island.
The Pacific, way out in the middle of the deep blue sea, there's a beautiful island, a tropical island for you and for me. Far beyond the horizon, tropical island for me and for you. We can go there together. We can play in the bay until the day is done. We will savor the weather. Always summertime, never winter time. Far, far from the fast lane. A tropical island for you and for me.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Idi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Thank you. This is Juno Afternoon on your community supported station KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. REACH is a nonprofit that offers developmental support to all ages across Southeast Alaska. One of their specific programs is the Infant Learning Program, which supports children from birth to 3 years old and focuses on relationship-based services to help support the child as they move through developmental levels. You can learn more about the program at reachilp.org. But here now in the studio live to tell us more are Anna Maddox, occupational therapist, and Christine Wick, music therapist, and they are both with REACH's Infant Learning Program. Gunath Chish, Haye Adi, it's a pleasure to have you both here. Thank you so much for coming. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
It's going great. Happy to be here.
Awesome. It's so good to have you here. I know that REACH has a big program, right? There's many things that REACH does for all ages, but you both work specifically in the Infant Learning Program. So let's talk about that. Give me sort of an overview of what that program does, and then we'll dive into some specifics.
Okay. So our program is birth to three-year-olds. We get referrals from the doctors or from parents. And once we get the referrals, we call and make a schedule for an evaluation. And we evaluate the child and then decide if they are showing a delay or any type of need that we can support. And then once we enroll the child into our program, we do home visits depending on like the frequency on how often the families feel comfortable. So that can be weekly, that can be every other week, once a month, check-ins. But yeah, we go to the child's home, play with the kid, provide the therapy with the family. And we're very much like a parent-child relationship based. So we try to encourage having the parent play with the child on the floor and do the most of the therapy because they're the ones that know the child.
Right. They're going to know it the best, right?
Yeah, totally.
So that's really interesting, too, that that it can start so young, right, from birth, basically. Mm-hmm. And so are there things that get noticed right away at that age, or is it something, or do you see more commonly things that are onset, you know, a few months in? I know I've had some folks who discovered that, you know, their child might be deaf because they realize, and at first you can't maybe know that, but then eventually you go, oh, wait a minute, something's happening here, right? And so I'm just curious about that. Like, what is the pattern of discovery mostly?
I would say it's definitely as the child progresses that we'll start to see things that come out. But certainly, like, if a child is born, like, premature or has, like, in utero exposure or has been taken into foster care system, like, those are the kind of, like, early on, like, almost, like, under a year old factors that we will be like, yes, you need to enroll, even though we aren't really seeing any types of delays or challenges yet, but more of like a watch and wait and support as they go.
Yeah, I see. And so who is the program for? Like, is it for, it's obviously for the parents and the child, but in terms of like, how would you know that maybe you want to look into the Infant Learning Program?
If you have concerns maybe for your child's developmental milestones. Because like Anna said, you can self-refer. It doesn't always have to come from a doctor or their primary care provider. So you can reach out directly to us if you have any questions or concerns.
Okay, I see. So a lot of times, as Anna said, it's coming from the initial sort of contact point is from a hospital or a family physician or something like that. But if somebody isn't doing that and they start to maybe have questions, they could reach out, right?
Correct.
Okay. And of course, you can find contact information and everything at reachilp.org. The main website for Reach is reachak.org. You can find out about all the different programs that are available. So if perhaps your child or your adult is over the age of 3, then they have other programs at Reach that might be of assistance to you. So, okay. So let's find out a little bit about each of you. I'm just curious. So, Anna, let's start with you. So you're an occupational therapist. How did you get started and how did you decide that you wanted to work with the littles?
Gosh, that's such a great question, but not a great answer. I just like decided to go to school. I grew up in Kentucky, went to Eastern Kentucky, and just happened to fall into occupational therapy. Someone had once told me, they're like, oh, I think you'd be a good OT. You're creative. You kind of sometimes think outside of the box. I was like, okay. And then during school, I came up to Juneau and worked, and then moved up here after I graduated. And that's whenever I just like applied to a couple of organizations in town, and Reach ended up having a position open. And then I became a specialist in birth to 3-year-olds. And now I'm like, wow, it just kind of fell in my lap exactly what I wanted.
Serendipity, as they say.
Yeah.
So now I think for me, I think of occupational therapy, and I think that's something that is, can you tell us a little bit about what that is and how that particular field applies to, you know, someone who's under the age
babies.
Of 3?
Yeah. What are the babies' jobs? Yeah, absolutely. So occupational therapy looks at you as a person and what your occupation is. And that can be your job. That can be everyday activities like self-care. So showering is an occupation. Walking is an occupation. Knitting is a leisure occupation. So kind of everything that you do is a type of different type of occupation. So when we look at babies, their occupation is play, eating, sleeping, and interaction.
Okay, hold on a second. Could I just have that be my occupation now? Play, eating, sleeping. That sounds good.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be so awesome. We should do that anyway, right? And as well as our jobs that pay the bills and all that kind of thing. Okay, and Christine, you are a music therapist.
Yes.
And so how does that fit into this? And how did you start? How did you find music therapy? And what's your journey?
Yes. Music therapy kind of found me. I have a very musical background, come from a musical family. I'm the youngest of 3, and my older brother and older sister were very musically inclined. So I followed in their footsteps and wanted to go to school for it. Wasn't sure what that was going to mean or how I was going to make a career out of it. So I kind of split my focus between music and psychology, really, as an undergraduate student. And my advisor at the time had an understanding and awareness of the field of music therapy. She went to school for nursing. Super bright lady. She's the best. And she also has a beautiful soprano singing voice. And so I immediately resonated with her in that she was kind of pulled in both directions, like science side, music side, what do I do with it? And so she helped me kind of find my path and a program. And I eventually changed schools and got my master's and fell into a music therapy program. And I originally started out working with mostly individuals experiencing autism. Mm. And I came to Juneau and didn't get my start with music therapy here until a couple years later. But Reach was interested in having a music therapist as part of their ILP team. And I immediately fell in love with working with the littles, as you say, 0 to 3. And so to answer your other question, how does music therapy kind of fit into that early intervention role? Music is multisensory, and so it involves a child in many different ways. And because of the multimodal approach, being able to engage in music, whether that's through your voice or through your body, playing instruments, we're able to facilitate many different developmental skill areas because of that. And music is play, right? And we know that play is where a child learns best and explores the world and makes sense of their bodies. And so there's so many different opportunities to play and be playful within creating music. And it, of course, cultivates connection and builds relationship and meets a child where they're at, whether they are communicating, playing loud or fast on a drum, or using their voice and exploring with their vocalizations. It's a pretty powerful and unique thing to see that communication between child and caregiver in that moment and that music together, shared joy.
Yeah, that's amazing. The music is emotion, right? Like it has emotion in it. And so
yes.
I'm curious, like, especially with those who may not be able to communicate as well, like, did you find that the music sort of brings out certain emotions and levels of responsiveness?
Yes. Like both sides, when you think of it, whether it's a child being able to emote or communicate in a different way through a musical interaction of some kind, whether it's using a vocalization or expressing their emotion with an instrument, and having their caregiver, family member receive that. And then as a caregiver or family member, receiving that communication is just as powerful, right? Because it's a new way to connect with your child. So it's a beautiful thing.
That's cool. That's great. Well, you both are doing amazing work. And I know that there's another couple members on the team as well. And it's just a wonderful program, right? I want to go back to something that Anna was talking about, which was where the work takes place. I think that's really interesting and important. How did that decision come to be, or why is that the decision? And can you speak a little bit more about that? I know you were talking about how it's like, because that's where the child lives, but how did that come to be? Do we know?
You know, there's actually a lot of research that supports the early intervention being in home, and how especially these like 3 and under kiddos, like how they interact and how like therapy progresses so much more quicker in the home as opposed to like outside of the home and with like the parents heavily involved. So we also, I mean, we'll do in-home visits, but on like on a sunny day like this, like we're definitely promoting like let's go to the park, let's get outside too, because they also like do great when we get the kids to come out of their home with their family members if they're kind of generally stuck in the house.
Yeah, I mean, it is great to get outside, especially you know, during the better weather. Obviously, that's really good. So I wanted to ask a little bit about the various systems that you mentioned. That I'm looking at the website and seeing some of these things, and I just wanted to break them down a little bit in terms of well, we know it's relationship based, right? That's the you say that in the beginning. That's like the very first thing, and and you're talking about the relationship between parent and child, right? And that your work. So I guess my question is a lot of your work is probably also not just for the child, but for the parent. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, the whole infant mental health world around that of understanding the dynamic between the parent and the child, the parent and me as a therapist, and just like me coming into the home, like that whole entire relationship has a big effect on our 1 hour session that week, and then what it'll look like the next week and the following week. Yeah.
It's so interesting. Okay. And then there's this other, tenants are a little something different, but the coaching model. Can you talk a little bit about the coaching model? What does that mean?
Yeah. Sorry, Christine. The coaching model is the same type of approach that I keep kind of saying, where we come in as like the professionals and we don't want to be looked at as like, we're going to take your child and do the therapy and then we're going to leave for a week and then come back and do the therapy. It's more of a, like, I come into the home, I build a relationship with you and your child, and I provide strategies for you that I recognize that are appropriate within your home for you to carry out. So it's me coaching the parent to be a therapist.
I see. Okay. That's really great, because I think we've mention this, the visits that you all do are 1 hour a week. So is the process like once you get referred and you have the initial meeting with y'all, then you sort of figure out, okay, we're going to plan for a certain amount of time to come in, or are you doing it up until the age of three, or does it depend on the child?
Well, it definitely depends on the child too. It's, all of those. So we do every 6 months, we do a review of goals and like how services are going. And then every year, we do a new evaluation for that child. And then at those 6 month reviews are where we talk about like, do we need to keep services? Do we need to increase services, decrease, whatever? And then typically, like once they're enrolled, we keep them enrolled until they turn three and then help transition them to where they will go after that, whether that's outpatient services through the hospitals, or we often will transition them to the integrated preschool programs around the around, you know.
I see. That was my next question was, where do they go after the three? Like what happens? They don't just expire, right? Yeah. Something they have to continue on doing something. But there's probably other programs that Reach provides, or like you said, there's other services around town that may be able to pick up there. So I'm just curious, like, can you, we don't want to, I guess I'm just curious about an example of how a visit works. Can you take us through, like, do you all go to one visit or is it one person go? Like, just give me an example of like a visit to, and what would happen during that hour?
Sure. It's very dependent. So sometimes it will be one person going, one provider, one therapist. There's a lot of co-treats that happen. So for example, it might be myself, the music therapist, attending with Anna, the occupational therapist, and working together. We arrive at your home. We usually check in with you to see how things have been going since the previous visit, whether that was last week or sometimes could be 2-3 weeks prior. Listen to any new updates or concerns that a caregiver may have. And then we work on that child's goals. So depending on what those look like, it could be helping motor skills development, communication, speech and language. And then that's pretty much it. It looks like play. We're on the floor. We're encouraging and coaching parents to do the same and supporting that relationship.
I imagine the hour feels like it can go fast.
Definitely. Right? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And the parents are probably wishing that they were longer. Maybe like, you guys do this, I'm going to go. Even though you're encouraging, they're like, can I go take a nap real quick? Like, yeah. Let me have a 20-minute cat nap and then I'll come back and play. No, but that's really great. And it really feels like I'm getting the sense that you both love this work.
Yes.
It's very, very rewarding.
It really is.
Yeah. What is the best thing about it? What is the most rewarding thing, if you can distill it down to one or two things?
Being a part of those shared moments of joy, whether that's like a first that's happened, like the first time so-and-so standing by themselves, or first time they're exploring their voice, or like a little like shared joy that happened, like I can't even think of an example right now, but just being there and witnessing that is powerful.
It's sort of like having your own child, but you get to do it all the time. Like that first walking, you get to experience it probably many, many times, which is pretty cool. That's pretty great. Now, I know some folks might be wondering cost. How does it work that way? Does insurance cover some of this stuff, or how do people?
It's free. It's all free.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
We will ask to bill insurance just to see if we can get any type of reimbursement from services. Like if we bill OT, PT, or speech, we do ask if we can bill your insurance. But if there's any co-pays that your insurance is asking for, we cover that. And then, it's all free.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
Wow. I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Like that's really, really cool because, so the basic process is, let's just go through it one more time and then we'll say goodbye. Is that, so if you have a child, who is under three. That's what this program is for. And usually it will be referred through a hospital or a family doctor or something like that. But if you have questions or you're seeing some things happening with your child as they're developing, like give Reach a call. Yeah.
Yes.
That's the best thing to do. That's great. I really appreciate you all coming in and telling us a little bit about the infant learning program. You can find out more at reachilp.org. That's a specific website for this program. It has a ton of detail and will answer a lot of questions. There's an FAQ section. There's tenets of the program. There's just a lot of great information on there if you're having questions. Reachilp.org. And or you can go to the main Reach website, which is reachak.org. So Anna Maddox, Christine Wick, thank you so much for coming in today and telling us all about it. Gwyneth Cheese for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Up next, Tidal Echoes is a literary and arts journal published by the University of Alaska Southeast, and it premieres this week. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Sounds wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
On a snowy day just before the winter solstice in 2023, 19 avid birders fanned out throughout the Unalaska area on the Aleutian Island of the same name for the annual Christmas Bird Count. The International Audubon Bird Count is held in thousands of communities and provides an annual snapshot of the birds in a particular area. Trends emerge over decades. Abundant birds become scarce and other birds become more common. The bird counters in Unalaska tallied close to 4,700 individual birds of 43 different species. Noteworthy were high numbers of black scoters, just over 1,200. Hundreds of cormorants, mergansers, and long-tailed ducks were counted, and 369 bald eagles. But two species have nearly disappeared, the common murre and the common raven. Over the past 7 years, the murre has gone from a high count of more than 4,000 through a steep decline to zero, or single-digit counts in some years. In 2002, 830 ravens were counted, and the average count over the past decade has been just over 200. In the past 3 years, ravens have almost disappeared. Only four ravens were counted in 2023. Avian flu is suspected as a cause. Sounds wild. I'm Riley Woodford.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Tidal Echoes is a literary and arts journal that publishes poetry, prose, and art from Southeast Alaskans. It's published by the University of Alaska Southeast, and the 2024 launch will be this Friday, April 5th at 7 p.m. at UAS Egan 112. I guess that's room 112. And we'll also be live streamed, which is kind of cool. And here to share about it are Sienna Chuback and AJ Schultz. Gwyneth Cheese for being here today. Hi.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, this is great. I mean, Tidal Echoes, how many years? Do we know how many years?
So it began in about 2002.
Okay.
Is when, yeah, the first edition
was out. Oh, wow. There. So that's like where are we going on? 22 years.
Yeah.
Whoa. Did you take a break during the pandemic or no?
No, yeah, no. We kept going. It was all online, obviously, but we still did the launch over Zoom.
Nice, okay. And the books were probably still available somewhere, right?
Yes, yeah, the books were still put out there, and then we did have an online version as well.
That's cool. Okay, so tell me a little bit about you both. Let's start with you, Sienna. How are you involved with Tidal Echoes?
Yeah, so I'm Sienna. I'm the senior editor this year. I was a junior editor last year. And so basically this is my internship for my senior year. And so I'm just here getting the journal all together, going through submissions, putting it together, speaking with our featured artist and writer, and then yeah, basically working with the launch, getting it up and running, and then distributing the books.
And are you looking to do something in the literary world after college?
Yes, absolutely. I was just talking with my advisor about this, hopefully going into editing. I was looking at editing certificates, stuff like that. So Title Echoes is definitely a good step in my future career.
I love that. That's so cool. Yeah. And AJ, what about you?
Yeah. So I'm published in Title Echoes this year. It's my first year being in the journal. I'm not on the board. I'm a UAS student. I'm a tutor in the UAS library. And I have taken workshops with Emily Wall, who I believe the title is faculty advisor. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah. Emily Wall is the faculty advisor for Title Echoes and the creative writing professor at UAS. And so one of my poems, which went through that workshop with her, is in this journal, along with pieces from just several of my friends. My friend Sophia was the fall editor this year. And I know a lot of people who have served on this and who will be serving on the Title Echoes board. And so I guess, yeah, my connection to Title Echoes is I love it because it is a literary spotlight of a community that I am a part of and that I love.
Yeah, that's great. And I do want to point out, because I remember learning this last year, is that you don't have to be a student to be published in Title Echoes, right? It's really open to all Southeast residents.
Yes, anyone in Southeast Alaska can submit to the journal. We usually have a little bit over 25% of the journal being student work, which is really unique and great because it's all undergrad work for the most part. But anyone in Southeast Alaska can submit.
So that's really cool.
Yeah, if you have poetry, artwork, anything, please submit to Title Echoes.
Please submit. And what's cool about that is, like AJ, you can now say you're published.
Yeah.
That you're published by a
published
journal.
Poet.
That is, you know, from a university, and a lot of universities have presses and do this kind of thing and, you know, publish these kinds of, you know, this kind of work. So tell us a little bit about the process. Like if somebody wants to submit, because obviously this one's coming out, and is it once a year?
Yes.
Okay. So it's once a year that it comes out. It seems to always come out around April-ish time, which coincides with the year you probably work on it all year long, right?
Yeah.
In terms of that. But after it's published, do you go right into the next journal taking submissions, or is it an ongoing submission process?
So basically our editors take the summer off and then we start up our fall intern. We'll start advertising in August for submissions, which are due every year on December 1st.
Okay.
And then two interns in the summer or in the spring semester will take that over, and then we'll have our launch journal ready first week of April.
Okay. That's great. So in the fall is when people should be thinking about submitting, and you have until December 1st. Now here's a question, because Sienna, I think you were talking about going through the submissions and everything. How do you decide what to put in the journal? What's that process like?
Yeah, it is a very difficult process. This year we got almost 600 submissions, which was a huge chunk for us to go through, but we have editors and then two student editors. And then we have our faculty advisor, Emily Wall, who works with us. And then we have our editorial board, which is made up of community members and faculty at UAS. And we basically all go through the submissions and then have a meeting and discuss. It is always very difficult to choose, though, because you're choosing from 600 fantastic pieces, but we only get 120 pages.
Okay. So, 120 pages, but sometimes it's shorter poems, right? So you might fit more in the book. Like how many of those 600 do you think you have included in the book?
Probably just over 80 of written work.
Okay.
80 pages. Because, you know, we also have the artwork in there and then table of contents, bios, everything.
Oh, yeah, all the
it's
things.
It's all included.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is also why you'll see probably more poetry, because prose takes up a lot more space of a thing. Yeah.
So that's a hint, right? If you might have a better chance of making the journal if you submit a poem that's short.
Well, we allow acceptance. Like you can submit prose and poetry. So we would highly encourage you just to submit everything.
Submit it all.
Yeah,
and
submit it
art
all.
And photography and paintings. And
that's really great. And that's so fun. So tell me a little bit about the featured work this year from the artist and the writer that you have.
Yes. So our featured artist this year is Elise Tomlinson, who is the UAS Library Dean, actually. We are super excited to have her work here also, which you'll see our cover art is her Medusa piece. And yeah, Elise and I worked together to choose that piece out of a collection of her work, about 10 pieces that are all still included in the journal. And Elise is very excited to meet with us on Friday. She'll be presenting and telling us a little bit about her process using AI and in the studio, everything like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then Misty St. Clair, another amazing Alaskan poet, will also be reading and talking a bit about her process on Friday, too.
Oh, wow. That is pretty great. And then, of course, AJ's in it.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you have published in there, AJ?
I have a poem called The Bench at the End of the World, which I wrote for one of Emily Wall's advanced creative writing workshops. And I have, I think, 3 photos of mine in there, too. So, yeah, and I'll be doing a reading of The Bench at the End of the World at the Tidal Echoes launch, which I am, like, very nervous about, but also very excited for.
Because I was going to ask, maybe I was going to try to put you on the spot and see if you would read it.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Could you read it on, could you read it for us now on the air?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be,
that would be great. Because I know last year we read a little some, so it'd be great to hear it.
So, yeah, this is called The Bench at the End of the World. It was the assignment for this in the workshop was to find a sacred space and return there and spend time there mindfully. And then at the end of it, produce a poem or story about it. And this was mine. A canopy of angel hair hangs from towers of earth over a constellation of boat light shining through a chain link fence in the bramble. Under flickering violet streetlight, rush hour hisses over November snow, drowning strokes of sailor's blade under halibut scales. Something in the noise says, I hope they get home safe. Sonder, as diamond gaps in the fence frame a trillion gallons per studded tire, 1,000 spruce per deadline chased by twilight Red Bulls, 421 coffee lids per million gulls on the harbor and counting. Wood planks soak in my leftover hemp smoke backwash, fingers burn. Inhale heat and let me melt. Its rain-soaked body absorbs hot and heavy breath, droplets of forgotten words erased by head fog. A homesick freshman, a lovesick vagabond, a homesick elder, drunken dropouts, doomed situationships, former future roommates. I was with a boy here, and the last night before he skipped town, he stalled for time. I hope he gets home safe. It waits on jagged earth off a wet trail before the summit of a hill called home, holding wanderers, burnouts, prodigies, boy geniuses, first-generation students, children of first-generation immigrants, lipstick on the rim of an Alaskan amber. Wait here long enough, company will find you. It's never alone for long. Take out one AirPod in case they recognize you. I'll find it here tomorrow in the same place I left it. No, days here aren't held by a deadbeat sun. I decide my dusk and dawn. Chapters start and will end here. Credits roll behind the moon, sorting the dialogues I remember, the chaos I call character, plot, conflict. I name the days after the sharpest memories, ignoring those worth ignoring. Andromeda's in no rush to meet me here.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
I hope you got an A. Emily would be proud. That was really great. That's, yeah, it's very visual. And that's fantastic. I'm really glad that you're in the journal there. Yeah, congratulations. So I'm curious. I know we have the launch this Friday. It's April 5th at 7 p.m. at UAS Egan 112. And it will also be live streamed. Where will it be live streamed?
It's on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you, our posters are all around town or on our Instagram. There's a QR code, sends you right to the YouTube link. Or you can just go to the UAS website, Tidal Echoes, sends you straight to the live stream.
Gotcha. Okay, that's great. And if somebody wants to pick up a copy of the actual book but can't make it on Friday, because is it still $5?
Yes, it's $5.
That's an amazing deal.
Yes.
It's $5. How do I get a copy?
Yeah. So at the launch, we are accepting cash only for the launch itself, $5. But it will be all around town. It's going to be at Hearthside, Kindred Post, Rainy Retreat, Alaskan Robotics. And then it is also, it's also in Ketchikan, Sitka, and Skagway in bookstores there. And then if you are completely out of the Southeast Alaska area, Kindred Post is doing online orders.
Oh, excellent. Okay. So you can go to Kindred Post and get it if you're listening outside of this state or the Southeast area. That is fantastic. And so is the book already in the stores or will it be in the stores like soon?
So the book is being delivered to stores today, but it will not be on shelves until Saturday.
Saturday, because you got to have the launch party first,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
I love it. Sienna Chewback and AJ Schultz with the UAS Title Echoes, which is launching this Friday at 7 p.m. You can pick up your copy after the launch party, but you should go to the launch party, right? Because there's going to be artists and writers and all kinds of wonderful things happening around Title Echoes. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We have three readers from UAS, a community member, and then our two featured artists and writers. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's worth going to hear everyone speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, that's cool. Gunachish, congratulations.
Thank you.
And thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Okay, up next, a sneak peek of this weekend's Juno Symphony Concert, where the youth ensemble Aurora Strings will be playing side by side with the Symphony Orchestra. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That's a little bit of the overture from The Magic Flute by Mozart, which will be part of the program that's happening this weekend. The Juno Symphony presents Tchaikovsky 5, a concert featuring Tchaikovsky plus this overture, as well as Juno's own Aurora Strings Youth Ensemble will play side by side with the orchestra and will feature the youth solo competition winner. And I have both in the studio with me now. I have Christopher Cook and Karis Hudson, who won for playing the cello, and you won the youth solo competition that the symphony puts on, Christopher?
Right.
Okay, great. So, well, Gunathchisha Yadi, thank you so much for being here today. It's really a pleasure. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
It's pretty good.
Are you in the middle of rehearsal?
Oh, yes. Rehearsal week.
Rehearsal week.
Yep.
Yeah.
Rehearsals almost every day. Kind of.
Almost every day.
Pretty fun week. As much as they can get to you, I bet. That's probably how it works with, because I'm assuming you're still in school and you have to do all those silly things.
Yeah.
And you'd rather just be playing music.
Yeah, I would.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. So tell us, tell us a little bit about the competition, the youth solo competition, and how you got involved in that and why you decided to be a part of that.
So the youth solo competition is a competition that the symphony holds every year where I think it's kids from usually high schoolers for the senior division can compete playing a concerto, which is a piece that can be accompanied by a symphony like I'm playing. And I heard of it through my teacher, Megan Johnson, and I heard of it like a couple years ago when I first started taking lessons, and I tried for it in the junior division, and that was just a good practice. Like, I wasn't very prepared, and I tried again this year, and it worked out pretty well.
Winning is pretty well. Yeah. Winning works. Yeah.
Winning works. It felt really good. I definitely have gotten over my nerves, not fully, but I've gotten over a lot of them. So I'm pretty excited for this concert.
Yeah, that's great. So may I ask how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 17.
17. Okay. And how long have you been playing the cello?
I've been playing for about 7 years.
7 years. And how did you get started?
I got started through the jam program. So I went, the good old jam program. I went to Riverbend Elementary, and actually Megan Johnson was the jam director there. And I started with violin in kindergarten, and then I started playing cello in, I think, third grade when they brought the cellos out, and I was like, oh yeah, this is way better than violin. I gotta do this because I just love everything about the cello, like the sound and the like versatility, everything. And so I started taking lessons about sixth grade, and I joined Mr. Shaw. I don't know. He's a great music guy around town. I'm in the Aurora Strings, and we actually went to Carnegie Hall through Aurora Strings, which was amazing. So
wow.
Yeah, there's a great music community here in Juneau, so that's definitely helped me.
Well, the jam program is so good. It's that youth program for music that happens all throughout the community, which is really cool. And I agree with you. The cello is an amazing instrument. I mean, they're all this. We don't want to hurt any of the strings feelings. They're all wonderful. But it seems also like that, you know, because I always worry about the idea of carrying an instrument around. But it seems like the cello's just... It's not too large,
yeah.
Right? It's not the bass, right?
No, and
it's
cannot do that.
That's giant, but it seems like it's a good size. And do you? I know now some people I've heard have played it in different ways. Do you sit and play?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Okay.
It's very comfortable position, actually, the cello. That's why I like it, because my posture is not good, so. Playing the cello, I don't have to have good posture. I can, I mean, maybe I do, but compared to the violin where you have to be very like upright and it's just a very natural position. And it's easy to lug around. Like, I have a nice case, has wheels. It's like not heavy at all. So
that's pretty great.
It's pretty good.
And like that sound that the cello makes, is that what sort of drove you to it? Is like the richness of the sound that it makes?
Oh, yeah. Of course, like when I was a kid, we watched videos of like Yo-Yo Ma and two cellos, groups such as that. And yeah, the sound is just, it's so deep, or it can go so high. And I just love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. In this piece I'm playing, it goes very high and we go all the way to the C string. So it's just very versatile.
Wow. And I'm assuming that as you're getting close to the end of your high school time, and are you planning to continue your education in music as you go forward?
Yeah, I am planning. I'm not sure exactly what I want to do yet, but I would want to continue playing cello in college if it's a minor or doing a major in music performance. I want to accompany it with something else. Like, I was thinking computer science, maybe. It just definitely want to have it be part of my life, though.
a cellist who's practical. Mm. I guess that's good, Christopher. Oh, yes. So tell us about the competition and why y'all do it and how you choose a winner.
Well, we've been hearing, I mean, Juno just has a wonderful assortment of programs that really help people grow into music. And, you know, from jam, which is really an extraordinary thing that we have here, and people like Megan who make it possible, and Lori Heggie and others, through opportunities like Juno String Ensembles, and not only will we have Karis and all of her wonderfulness at this concert, but we'll have Aurora Strings mm-hmm. playing with us on one piece. So it's really a celebration of music education here in Juno. And yeah. So you ask, you know, why do we have a youth solo competition? Well, for people who really devote a lot of energy and a lot of themselves to music, like Karis, you know, it's wonderful to have opportunities to do something beyond the practice room and beyond the expected. And most humans never get an opportunity to play a solo or sing a solo work with an orchestra. I mean, that is just not a very common thing to do. And it's a wonderful opportunity for young people who've worked as hard as Karis has to not only get to experience that, but to share their love of music and all of their work with everyone.
Yeah, that's really great. Well, congratulations again. I think that's going to be awesome. So as you're the youth solo winner, does that mean, are you going to be sitting in are you up front? Do you have like highlights as this solo performer in terms of what you're going to be playing on Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah. So for the concerto portion, I will be sitting in front and facing the audience. And then for the second half of the concert, I'll be playing back with the symphony. So I'll have an outfit change in the middle.
That's great. And that's really great. Okay. So Christopher, why this program that we're having, you're calling it Tchaikovsky 5, which includes his Fifth Symphony,
right,
but then all this other programming that you're going to be doing, how did you, and this is the last one before the summer, right?
There's right.
The summer concert, but this will be the sort of spring concert. How did you come up with this program?
Well, this one, you know, obviously is a celebration of music education. And that's an important thing for us. And we wish that we could do every single concert and include something like this, but we can't. So we feature our youth solo competition winner each year. And when we can, we do a project like we're doing with Aurora Strings, where we give other student musicians the chance to play side by side with symphony musicians. So it's definitely a celebration of music education. There's not really an overarching theme to the event, except for stylistic variation. So, you know, Tchaikovsky 5 is the main work on this concert, and it is, you know, it is one of the most beloved of all symphonic works. It's very popular with musicians, with audiences, with recording buyers. And there's a lot of good reasons for it. First of all, Tchaikovsky had a tremendous gift for melody and a tremendous gift for portraying emotion in music. And he wrote many wonderful works. But the Fifth is one of his, I guess you could say he was at the height of his powers. Basically, from the Fourth Symphony through the Sixth, his final work, which we played a couple of years ago, he was really in full command of all that he did. And the Fifth is kind of an interesting work because it started for him kind of with an exploration of the idea of writing what's called a program symphony, which is something that he really never did write for the most part, which is kind of associating literary ideas with musical ones. And that's something that not many composers really followed kind of Tchaikovsky school. They were absolutists, meaning, yeah, we'll let the music speak for ourselves. But he started ideas for the Fifth Symphony in that vein and really kind of fixated on this recurring motive that you'll hear in the work. And it's this da, 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 da rhythm that comes back in all four movements. And even though he discarded a lot of his early ideas, he kept that motive, and he kept the idea that that motive might mean something. And that's been one of those little, I don't know, musical mysteries. It's like, what did Tchaikovsky really mean? And probably what he meant was, well, it sounds the way I want it to sound. But there's no question that at one point he was thinking about the idea of a musical theme or rhythm that was kind of tied in with maybe his own fate.
Mm.
And again, that's not how he ended up, but the legend kind of got bigger than the truth. And so a lot of times this piece is referred to as, you know, it's sort of fate knocking at the door there at the beginning of this work. And it's like Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, which, you know, that motive, da-da-da-da, is very famous, well-known, and a lot of people have tried to ascribe meaning to it. Like that piece, Tchaikovsky's Fifth is sort of a tragedy to triumph kind of work. So it starts out in one mood and it ends in a very different one. And it's just it's just basically, you know, heavy metal for orchestra. It's huge, huge moments, lots of variation, huge amount of passionate drama in the music. It really truly is just one of the mega hits in the orchestral world.
Wow. That's pretty great. And you can, of course, go to JunoSymphony.org and get tickets for this weekend. It's Saturday night and then Sunday afternoon, and it's at Juno Douglas Yadaa Kathleh Auditorium.
Right.
And that's going to be really great. And Karis, what's it like to, like, listening to Christopher talk about sort of the history of the music and where it comes from? And I'm just curious, like, what's it like to play with the symphony? Do you pick up things as you're playing with musicians, different musicians?
Yeah, definitely. Ever since I've started playing with the symphony, I feel like I've definitely gotten better as a player. And it's hard, obviously. It's harder playing with more experienced people, but I definitely have to work harder and, you know, have the musicality and the nuance that all of these pieces require, like the Tchaikovsky. It's a workout. It's tiring. As you said, it's heavy metal. Like, it is, especially for the cellos during the last movement. And it's definitely helped me gotten a lot better as a player. So I'm really grateful that we have such a good symphony here in Juno.
That's great. And I know you're all going to be playing on, we're going to go out and listen to this as we end today. And it's, can you say it for me, Christopher?
It's the Farandole from Georges Bizet's L'Alsacienne, which was incidental music for a very depressing play. But the music is wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. So we'll listen to that, and we'll say goodbye for Juno Afternoon today. It's the Juno Symphony's Tchaikovsky 5 concert, which is going to include a lot of great music. And of course, featuring Karis Hudson, who was the solo youth competition winner. And it's this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And for more information, you can go to JunoSymphony.org. Here's a little bit of that lovely music that the Aurora Strings Youth Ensemble will be playing on this weekend. Do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday. On tomorrow's show, we are going to have a special conversation with Lily Hope and Ray Mills about the upcoming Raven's Tale weaving event happening at the end of April. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO, Juno 104.3 and KAUK, Juno Ok Bay 91.7. Hello out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, and find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.